Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, before we jump into this episode, I want to remind everybody about the purpose of this podcast. I want you to listen to this podcast and figure out how and where you can get into real estate investing yourself. So if you've got a deal that you need funding for, let me know about it. If you want to buy a property in your backyard or in another market and flip it, let me know about it. If you want to buy a cash flowing property and you need to figure out where you're going to buy it, let me know about it. If you've got money that you just want to put to work right now as a private lender, let me know about it. This is what I'm here to do. I'm here to help you invest. All you need to do is go onto our website, dealfarm.net, and fill out the form. It comes directly to my inbox, and I will respond to you directly and do whatever I can to help you become a successful real estate investor.
You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Jordan Fisher. Jordan, how you doing?
Good. Hey, Ken, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Appreciate you being on the show.
My pleasure.
So Jordan is another friend of mine who is in the Collective Genius. He's actually out of the LA market. He's had a fix and flip business there for a number of years. He's the managing partner at Inspire Capital. And he also is a broker. He's a licensed broker in LA. And the brokerage is Good Bones Properties. Jordan, I've always kind of looked at you as the jack of all trades. It sort of seems like you've got your hands in all sorts of different things.
I do. I'm not so sure that's always a good thing, but yes, that is true.
So, but before you even got into real estate, what were you doing?
A lot of things. I think before that I was doing advertising. I worked for most of the big ad agencies in LA doing like brand strategy and stuff for a number of years. My wife too, actually.
Really?
And I was when I graduated college, I did a bunch of odd jobs like rollerblading instructor, working in a tanning salon and things like that. But eventually, and you know, I started a bunch of dot-coms, but eventually I did do a couple of years of real estate, like commercial property management, kind of in like leasing, like retail and industrial space in Orange County.
Yep.
And then I got away from that, and that's when I started all the .com stuff. But then I got into advertising for a number of years without doing any real estate for a good, I don't know, it must have been at least 10 or 12 years. In fact, I even got an MBA during that time. Still not real estate related, and it was only later that I came back to real estate.
Interesting. Well, so what was your actual major in?
It was sociology and psychology in undergraduate.
Okay.
And business entrepreneur stuff and MBA.
I gotcha. And so I guess I could see how the sociology would carry into like an ad agency.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Sociology, psychology is always good for anything.
Cause those are, it's kind of competitive to get into an ad agency, isn't it? And it doesn't pay a lot, but it's real hard to get into. Is that an accurate assessment?
Exactly. Yes. And they use that against you. Yes. I think it's great for someone in their 20s and things. I think when you start having kids, and you're really trying to like get your roots down and buy a house, things like that, it gets a lot tougher.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine too, though, having that background in advertising probably is carried well into all these other endeavors of yours as well.
It does, just for like, because I was in brand strategy, I was always trying to like work with brands to give them back their purpose.
Uh-huh.
Like a Converse, like an Adidas, like a lot of car brands I work with to kind of, you know, it was cool and hot at one time and it kind of lost its way.
Yeah.
But people still associate things with a brand that are really relevant. They're just not kind of on the surface now. And so it was kind of like mining those things and then revealing them in a way that's relevant for, you know, for today's consumer. So actually for that, I love, like, that's why I like the rehabbing business, because I'm really like repurposing a house. My name, my brokerage is Good Bones Properties, because we're always buying older houses in Los Angeles that have good bones.
Yeah.
And we're kind of repurposing it for like today's buyer, but keeping the character, you know, in place.
Absolutely.
And so it gives me like a different eye. Maybe when I see things, I kind of look at things in that way. And then also obviously when I'm selling the house, I try to like brand it a certain way, you know, to get the most money for the house.
Yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
So then what sort of lured you away from the ad agency to get back into real estate?
Lured. That's a good word. I'm not sure that is exactly what happened.
That's not what happened.
But yes. You know, I was like running the brand strategy for a bunch of agencies that were next in LA, as I said, and I was traveling like once a week to New York, and I had a young kid, one at the time, and was traveling every week for new business or anything else, and it was driving me absolutely up a wall because I hate being away from my kids. And I got laid off for, I think, the second time in about 2 years, 2.5 years, which happens a lot in ad agencies. And I was about to start looking for another house. My wife said, God, why don't we like flip a house? You know, we watch these shows. My wife is a designer and she knows I've always liked real estate. I just haven't been involved in a while. And I said, you know, that's interesting. And so we did that. We actually took out a second mortgage on our house to do that. And we bought a house near us, yep, put everything in and made it work. I got my broker's license and made it work. And I got to eat Mexican food with the guys every day, which I love to do. My wife's from Tucson and she grew up with Mexican food and now doesn't eat it. So I never eat it. So I got to eat Mexican food with the guys every day. Nice. I got to learn how to build walls and all that. And I loved it. She got to design the kitchens and the bathrooms. So that's kind of how that business started.
So you were actually out there swinging hammers doing the work yourself on that first one.
I just like to like learn, you know, I like a quick learner and I like to really learn what to do. So I feel like that's the way that I kind of learned how to do all this stuff. I don't really, not saying that I'm a contractor that knows everything and all, but I know enough and I always like to learn so I can, I know I'm not being ripped off and I know the work is quality work and, you know, I know how to motivate people like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's always all this talk about, you know, not doing the work yourself and what's your time worth. But, you know, in that first one or two or three houses, to get out there and understand how to rehab a house, I think that's invaluable just going forward and making sure, like you said, you're not getting ripped off.
It is, just to get a sense of the timing, because it's really tough to evaluate what kind of the scope of work it's going to take and also how much it's going to cost until you've actually gone through many of them and seen how long they take and see the problems and hear like what kind of labor, not only like the labor you're paying for, but like what kind of labor it is and like what they're motivated by. That will really help you guys. Otherwise, you're just kind of really making a guess. And that's when things get squirrely on you.
Yeah. So your first experience was a good one. It's funny, we talked to a lot of folks on the show that, you know, their first one just bombed and they decided to keep at it and it eventually became success. But your first flip then was a successful one?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was like a 1926 Cape Cod house that was like a dollhouse that turned out absolutely perfect. We did every inch of the house and we loved it. But right when we finished was when the market was like tanking.
Oh no.
And so I was just learning how to, you know, real estate in that regard and a broker and all that stuff. And we were chasing the market down. And although we made money on it, it wasn't, you know, obviously I would do things a lot different now, but you know what happened after that house? I was looking for houses at the time, other houses to buy, and everyone I talked to was underwater. And so I was kind of using my, I don't know, just kind of negotiating skills and just kind of creative, I don't know, creative abilities, tried to figure out like how to make that work. And I ended up, because I ran into so many people who were underwater, I didn't really know what to do with that. And that's when I went to like, you know, I went to like Michigan and I went to Cleveland and got a bunch of other places in Florida to learn how to do short sales and deal with that, because it was just kind of hitting again here in California and most people didn't know what to do with it. And so I kind of flew out there, learned as much as I could. Just, I'm like a quick study, like to read as much as I can and then kind of put that in play and end up doing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of short sales for the next few years.
So what year was that, like 2009?
2007.
10?
No, it was 2007. So early, eight, yeah, it was okay. Early. We just started. People were underwater and they weren't really doing short sales. They just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so it had already been prevalent a lot of, you know, in those places I told you in the country, but here it was just coming back. And so you talk to a realtor, no one even knew what a short sale was here unless they've been around the early 90s. So yeah, that's kind of how it worked.
And so did that sort of then become your strategy going forward, is just sniffing out short sales?
Yeah, like I had a negotiating company and did a lot for other realtors and we'd buy a lot of properties, sell a lot of properties, a lot of rehabs. And so, yeah, we did that for a long time. I think I was known as like the LA short sale guy for a long time.
Really?
But I started, you know, just as you're in the business, started kind of adding more tools to my belt about different things I could do. So any lead I ran across that maybe wasn't underwater, but it was underwater and also had like this factor attached, or it was a distressed owner and a distressed house, or just a distressed house and non-distressed owner, or both together, like that I could figure out a way to make money doing that. And so I kind of just still every day, you know, even now today, I'm obviously add tools to my belt. So I just try to make it revenue producing whatever I run into.
Did your volume then get up pretty high? Are you still at the same volume you're at? Or is that, I guess, like anybody else, probably changes from year to year. But
yeah,
in the downturn, were you just running and gunning?
Yes. A couple hundred short sales a year.
No way. Holy cow.
Really busy. Yeah, really busy. And for good and bad, mostly all good. But, you know, it's just that market in particular, it's just, you know, there's a lot of drama.
Yeah. So, well, and when people get underwater, it's not a few thousand dollars in California. You get a couple hundred grand underwater and people are pulling their hair out.
That's right. But I just feel if you can deal with like that distressed stuff, and it's when you got not only a distressed house, but, and I don't mean like an REO because there's no owner attached, just a bank, but a distressed house and a distressed person. If you can deal with that, then I think it gives you like a lot more tools, even when the market's good, to like be more creative to try to make something happen.
Yeah. So during that time, how many of them were you buying versus just brokering?
I don't know, maybe half and half. We weren't doing a lot of rehabs then. We were just turning over houses. We would do some rehabs and some we just turn them right over. You know, we just buy them and sell them without any physical work attached, or just like really little, just clean up, you know, makeup. But we were still doing a lot. And I wasn't really doing like deep, like very intensive rehabs then because I just didn't need to. I just would turn them over. I think maybe I would do something different in hindsight. I'd probably keep some of them. I'd probably do more intensive rehabs to grab like a higher margin. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I was just so busy. I was just mostly just turning them right over.
Were you selling them to investors mostly, or you were actually just putting them back on the market and selling them retail?
Mostly retail.
Really? So even yeah. In the downturn, there was still a market. It was just a lot less for retail buyers.
Yeah, there's always out here until in LA, there's always a market for retail buyers. It's just how you sell to them changes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And what price point? Price point's up or
it's
down?
At what price point? Yep, exactly.
What an interesting business to be in. So most investors out there, you know, are not licensed. They're not agents. They're not brokers. Do you feel that maybe you having gone and gotten your broker's license gave you an advantage over the last so many years?
Huge advantage. Number one, obviously, because I talked to some, you know, a bunch of similar friends who some people think I'm an investor and I don't even want a license because I don't want to be responsible for this or that or have to disclose this or that. And I mean, everyone has their own viewpoint. I think it's a big advantage just because obviously you have incredible cost savings where if I'm a broker and I'm buying and I'm getting commission when I buy on one or both sides, and when I'm selling, I'm possibly saving one or both sides. There's a lot of deals that maybe other people can't do that I can, number mm-hmm. one.
Yep.
And number two, if you're a broker or agent, you tend to get along better with other agents, whether you like them or not. They just feel more comfortable. So that conversation is much easier to get deals in your pipeline. Because you're a peer, they, you know, a lot of agents, when you talk to them as an investor, their shoulders go up and they get really nervous because they don't know what to say and what not or what they can disclose. But when you sell them that you're a realtor, all of a sudden their shoulders drop and they're like, hey, what's going on? What can I tell you? And they kind of want to help. It's really a different atmosphere, at least out here in Los Angeles it is. So, but even I do things around the country and still, even when I talk to other realtors on the phone, I just find it's a much easier conversation if they know you're a realtor. It doesn't even matter what you're talking about. If you're talking about it, it doesn't matter. It just seems that way.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like on a level playing field with them, or like you're in their club and they can mm-hmm. disclose more to you. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I still do a lot of business, like broker business. In fact, right now I sell a lot of properties for other investors, even other investors who are brokers, just because I like selling property. I'm very good at it. I have like a certain system and it's fun for me. So just having that license or whatever will just, it's just another way to bring in capital or another way to make money when you see a transaction.
Sure.
It's like another tool on the belt.
Absolutely. Are you doing right now? Are you doing a lot of marketing for just traditional brokerage, or is it almost all word of mouth for you?
Yeah, all word of mouth. I really don't do any marketing for the brokerage. I really don't necessarily want those kind of clients. I typically just sell for friends, other people who know I'm a broker, or a lot of like investors who want me to sell their property fast. And, you know, I help them kind of with the rehab, especially because I'm a lender too, right? So I often lend money out and these people to other rehabbers, and they're doing their work and they want, you know, so at the end, I may come in and like as a broker, just advise certain things to sell for more. And then oftentimes I get involved. If they have a problem selling it, I get involved to like sell it quickly or just help them or help their agent, you know, devise strategies to liquidate the property.
Yep. Well, and you've shared with me and some other guys before, you have just an awesome strategy for selling properties and positioning yourself correctly. You mind maybe just expounding on that for a couple of minutes? Because I think it's a really profound strategy.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I'm a student of leverage. I think leverage is so important in a conversation, whether it's real estate, whether it's buying something at the store, it really doesn't matter. And a lot of people take it for granted. They are just thinking like, I will just say what's on my mind, or I'll be just very direct and I won't get all, you know. And I think you have to really think, if you're not thinking about leverage, you're losing leverage. That's how I think about it. Now, when I mean leverage, I mean, if you think of like a seesaw, you always want to be on the top of the seesaw. So you always want to be like either when you're selling prop, when you're rehabbing a property, you always want to like rehab a property so you won't have a problem with any buyer. You're not leaving, as I say, like a bat on the kitchen counter for a buyer to hit you over the head with. That means your finishes are good. That means you don't have light switches, like just a little turn one way. That means like everything in the house is addressed. It may not be the perfect taste of a buyer who's looking at it, but everything is addressed and it looks like you've paid attention to it, because that's where it starts. And then of course, when you're selling properties, the same way, how to keep leverage, how to create, like how to make the market come to you, how to like keep like people really feeling like offers are going up, getting in bidding wars, And not only that, but after you have, when you accept an offer, like all the way through the escrow period until the property is actually sold, you have a lot of leverage, which means like a lot of control. So buyers, even though they're under contract with you, will do what you want, move quickly, not waste time, and not, you know, fall out of escrow. So all those things at the end of the day just save you a lot of money and make you a lot of money, which a lot of people don't do. You know, a lot of people say there's a lot of money when you buy property. That's where all the money is. It's the price you buy it at. That may be true, but I honestly think that's only half of it. What you sell and how you sell it for is a whole nother half of the profits there and a whole nother like stress reliever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people don't think of strategy in terms of selling. Most people just think, I'm going to price it probably where I should price it and then just let them come to me and figure out what to do next. But most people never have a game plan. And that's what's cool about your strategy is that there's actually a game plan from the get-go, you know, about creating a sense of urgency and sort of having the ability to be aloof towards those people where they're sort of, they feel like they're competing to get the property from you.
Always. Yeah, I think, and it's natural. I think a lot of investors in particular, especially if they're just starting out, will just think, well, once I find them to the property, once I will work with an agent I know, or I'll find a great agent, I'll find the best agent in the area and I'll let them do their job. Mm-hmm. They know more than me, so I'll let them sell it. But a lot of times what agents do in general is, and I would say 95% of the time, is just not, is not going to earn you the most money, is not going to close the property fastest, is not going to give you leverage. And you really have to think about every decision you make when selling a property, even when you're doing the rehab, should be about creating leverage. When it's so, I mean, it's things as easy as, well, when you list it on the MLS, if you're listing on the MLS, or do you list it in other places? When is your open house? How long is your open house? How are you going to counter offers and how long are you going to have that offer period? Those are normal things that most people would say, well, an agent knows all the answers to that. Everyone does it the same way. Those aren't really a strategy. Well, I would totally disagree, because if you're not thinking about, did I just create leverage when I made this decision? When I said I want the open house on Sunday from 2 to 4, did I just create leverage in making that decision? And how am I going to increase that leverage when I get near that date? If you're not thinking like that, I guarantee you just let a little leverage slip out of, you know, get out of the equation, and it's probably going to cost you later.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to help agents and investors like think about things like that and try to, like, I have a game plan going forward to make sure I'm at the top of the seesaw all the way through. That's how I get the most money, the most interest, sell properties very quickly and in total control. Then it's fun. Otherwise, it's not fun. It's nerve-wracking.
Right.
I like that fun. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. When you're in escrow and they're beating you up because you didn't fix this or fix that, or they know you don't have any backup offers.
That's right.
And they're asking for this concession and that concession. You're right. By the end of the day, you've conceded all this potential profit, and everybody's disappointed.
Yes. And it's not thousands of dollars. It's tens, twenties, thirties, a lot more. I mean, it's you wouldn't believe. And a lot of investors I talk to who are very successful are just so busy because they're really good, like, marketing machines.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of properties, but they're mostly focused on the buy side, the acquisition and the buy price side. And they're just so busy, they don't focus on the sell side because they have realtors who do all that for them.
Yeah.
And they don't realize, like, yes, you're selling properties, but there's so much money and leverage left on the table that you could probably do a third of what you're doing and make even more money.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you don't think about it. I mean, I never thought about it until you kind of presented it to me. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off. Well, yeah, I am getting beat over the head every time I list it. And here's why. And it's because I didn't have a game plan from the get-go. And I guess I can see why you got a lot of investors in Southern California that probably want you to list their houses for them, because this is what you're doing. This is the service you're providing.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, some of it is just because I'm in Southern California. Inventory is always low. I mean, it's tough to get hundreds of properties again. You're just working with the properties you have. So you really got to work on strategies to squeeze as much money as you can out of every property.
Yeah.
And out here, you've got a lot of, you know, you got Hollywood out here, right? So you're always working, at least I am, always working with agents or whatever who just maybe have celebrity clients or high-powered clients or clients who are attached to a CPA, an attorney at the hip, and a broker. And they're really trying to, like, bully you constantly. Very common out here in Southern California for agents to bully. Very common. Threaten, bully. So if you really don't have leverage, they're going to bully you to death. So the way to prevent that is just to have leverage from the start, and then there's no more bullying going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I learned how to do this, just because I'm in this market and I deal with those kind of clients all the time. I've been on the other side, under their thumb, and been like, God, how did I get under their thumb? Like, I'm not letting this happen again. In fact, not only am I not going to let this happen again, I'm going to learn what they did and try to do it on the other side.
That's right.
But I'm not going to make it personal. So it won't be from me. It'll just be from the market. That's kind of how I do it.
Yeah. And so I never thought about the fact that, yeah, in Southern California, it's like you said, it's definitely more dollars. It's higher profile people with higher expectations. And I never thought about the fact that they have the potential to bully you around a little bit more than somewhere like Atlanta.
Oh, well, I'm sure Atlanta too, but yeah, LA is just not, it's just bully, 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 everything. Anything that goes that they don't like, it's just they start to bully.
That's crazy. Yeah. Do you feel like your strategy for creating leverage works in any market, whether it's a hot market or a slow market?
It does. In fact, I've been doing it for a number of years, and I educate people all over the country. In fact, you know, I'm mastermind everywhere else just about this that works. It works everywhere in a hot or cold market. It's really just like framing the conversation. It doesn't even have to be real estate, but it's framing the conversation to get the result that you want without making it personal. Mm-hmm. And that kind of works in a up market, down market. It doesn't really matter. You would change things a little bit depending on the market, but in terms of how you're creating leverage is the same.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you have any material out there that we could point people to? I'm just curious if you've ever presented it somewhere or if you do coaching on it, because it's such a valuable tool. I'm wondering how we could point people in that direction.
Yeah, you know, it's Inspire My Capital. It's under our education section, and it's called How to Sell Real Estate Fast for Top Dollar with Ultimate Control. And there's an interview I did on there. You have to download it, I think, on there, because it's a long, it's about a 30-minute interview. But on there, I go on through a lot of just how I create leverage. There's some good things in there.
Awesome. Awesome. We will steer people to that. I'll put a link up on our website too at dealfarm.net directly to that. I'll find it and make sure people can get to it quickly.
Sure.
I think that's awesome. Okay. I appreciate you sharing that with
us. No problem.
So let's talk about what you're doing now, because I know like we said, you got your hands in a lot of different things and you're in different markets now around the country. What's sort of your primary business at this point?
I still do like a lot of flips and stuff. I hate that word flip because it just sounds so flippant and cutting corners. I don't like that word, but yes, I buy and sell, you know, rehab properties, renovate properties out here in Los Angeles quite a bit. We do a lot of things in the South. I have a couple partners in the South that I do things with there in terms of, I'll just use the word flipping properties, or we do a lot of buy and hold out there. And then, you know, I run like a fund, a private money fund that funds a lot of rehabbers across the country. A lot of people, you know, Ken, obviously in our Collective Genius Mastermind, other mastermind groups. And then, yes, I'm a broker. So, yes, I sell other investors' properties, wholesale, regular, a lot of different aspects. I just really enjoy that, and I use my system, so it's pretty clean and fast, and it's just so much fun. When you have leverage and you do it the first time the right way,
yeah,
it's just so much fun. After that, you just have a blast. So I really like to do that. So that keeps me busy.
So real quick, the fund, Inspire My Capital, maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a private mortgage pool fund. It's like a hard money fund. I don't like to say that. It's a private money fund because we're more like private bankers for our clients. We usually only work with people we know or who are referred to us typically. Or we'll see if it's a green person, someone new, we will set them up or partner with them or something until they get their first couple deals going. But yeah, we are funding typically short-term mortgage loans for fix and flippers or like redevelopers who are always improving the value of the house. And we do that all over the country. We have a lot of different loan programs from very conservative to very aggressive. And we really like that. And we got into that, to be honest. I was always borrowing money from funds and private individuals. And I had a lot of private individuals who were giving me cash all the time for my rehabs, but I didn't always have one every single day. I'd close one and maybe I have one starting in a week. And all the money would go back to that person. They'd say, okay, Jordan, where's your next deal? And I'd say, well, I don't have one right now. It's in a week. I'd say, and then I go back in a week later and they say, oh, I just put it back in the stock market. And be like, no, you know, so it made a lot of sense for me because I really liked the lending business and I've been doing a lot of loans myself for a while. So we started a bigger fund to fund all these people. And to be honest, when you do a fix and flip property, for people who haven't done it listening to this, or even if you have, you would know that when you do it and you sell the house, you fix and flip it, you sell the house, you make money and you say, hey, I just sold this house and made all this money. People don't really care. And I don't blame them. I mean, you made money and good for you, but it's a lot more fun when you make money with other people.
Totally.
And I love to partner on deals, and especially when we're lending money. I love to lend money to a fix and flipper. They make money. The fund makes money. Then we go out and have a drink. It's fantastic. It's just so much more fun.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. And so somebody that's out there listening that's, you know, got some money sitting in an IRA or in the stock market and it's not doing anything for them, somebody like that wants just passive income. They don't necessarily want to own a rental property or something, but they put their money in the fund. And that's essentially what the fund is doing. It's putting money into the market as short-term mortgage loans, and they get some sort of return on their investment.
Yeah, it's like it's becoming a lot more popular, these private mortgage funds. They're like, it's a really passive, secure way to earn a solid return. Like our fund is 8% plus half the funds. It's been almost 12% since we started the fund a couple of years ago. And it's really passive. You're a lender. You're not a owner of the property. So you don't pay, you know, you're not a landlord, right? You don't pay taxes. You're just a lender and you're very secure on the property because you're at a low loan to value. So it's a very, positive way to diversify your portfolio in real estate and be very secure because, you know, it's nice to have things in the stock market and everything else. And that is equities and that is paper stuff, but it's also nice to have things in real assets like gold, silver, real estate, whatever else. And lending is a really good way to do that because you're put a lien on the property and you are secured there. And it is real estate, which is always worth something.
Well, and the advantage of investing like your fund over just being a private lender is you put it in once and you're not having to get it back and put it back in play and then get it back and put it back in play. It's just basically being managed by you. Right.
That's a good point. Yes. It doesn't always. Yes, that's right. It goes into the fund and the fund is making loans on all these different properties. So it's not only secured on one property. When you're a lender and you make a loan on one property, it's on that one property. Mm-hmm. This, it's on all these properties at once. So it's super secure that way because it's very diversified.
Yep.
So yeah, in a way, it keeps the money working 24/7 all the time. It's not based on one property. Again, once it's in the fund, the pool, it is working all the time. So you're constantly earning the interest that, you know, that is paid.
Yeah, well, really. So it's two things. It's diversified. You're in a bunch of different loans, and it's always in play. You never have to worry about it coming out and not earning interest for any amount of time.
Correct. That's why it's becoming more popular among money managers and things.
Totally. So, Jordan, you've got your hands in a bunch of different things. You're investing in different parts of the country. You're obviously flipping a lot in L.A. Is there one deal in your mind that over the last 10 years or so that stands out to you as your best deal ever?
Yeah, you know, there is one that because we've been talking about this and because I do have my hands in a lot of different parts, there is one that I think maybe gives an example of why it might be important to like be a broker, have your hand in different pies. Mm-hmm. I did one, a couple of years ago, I think, not even that long, I don't even know, that was here in the San Fernando Valley. And it was a owner who was a older couple who had a two-story house and they hadn't walked upstairs in 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, to be honest, it's not that uncommon. But they didn't know where to go and they had relatives out of state and the thought of moving was very difficult. And when I met them, I actually met them because I rehabbed the house across the street. Oh, wow. I met them then and it was a year later they called me and said, "Remember us?" And I said, "Oh yeah." And they said, "Hey, can you help us with our house?" And I said, "Sure, I can sell it. I can do, you know, I can buy it, whatever you like." And it ended up being they didn't want an open house. They wanted me to buy the house. But not only that, they owned it free and clear and they were moving out of state. And they were buying a house of similar size. And when I heard that, I realized, well, if you're buying a house similar size out of state, I'm sure it's not worth as much as this one. And it wasn't. And so they didn't need all the money from this. They only needed enough to buy the new house and some living expenses until this one sold. So on that house, yeah, I ended up buying it. They ended up carrying the paper. So it was seller financing because they only needed a certain amount of money. I actually found them a moving company and a broker out of state where the family was. They found the house. I flew them out there. They actually, the broker after two times, found them a house that they wanted. They bought the house. Then I ended up, I rehabbed the house of theirs before, you know, they moved out. I helped them move in the moving truck. I ended up rehabbing their house and sold their house and made a lot of money on that house. But not only that, they then invited me out for Thanksgiving because they were so happy with what I did in the house. I drove out there for Thanksgiving, my whole family, and I met them for Thanksgiving, and then they invested in my fund.
What?
So just to give an example, like all those – and by the way, I was a broker, not when I bought it because I just bought it straight up, but when I sold it, I was. So just to give an example, like you can have all these parts as long as they're disclosed in different ways and, you know, involved, and you can be a win-win for everybody. I mean, they were thrilled. I was thrilled. I made money in different parts along the equations at different times, not all at once and then never again at different times. So all that stuff is just, that isn't that unusual if you just think about those things when you start.
Oh my gosh. You're the only only investor / broker I ever know that got invited to Thanksgiving dinner across state lines because you did such a good job getting their house sold. Well, and you made a ton of money on them too in the process.
Yeah. And they were happy. Well, yeah. You know, every person's situation, you know this, I'm sure, in the South better than I, because it's more prevalent out there than it is here. But when I do things in the South, right, there's a lot of people who have owned their houses forever, right? Yep. And they may have bought it at $5,000, $10,000, it may be worth $100,000 now. But for them, if it's 50, you know, they can get $50,000 now and it's clean and it's done and they're not really involved in the house. That's, they're as happy as can be, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, yeah. those are the types of testimonials you want too. They're thrilled that you bought their house. Even if you bought it discounted, they don't care. They just wanted to move.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I would suggest to anyone who's just starting out. For me personally, I like to meet every person I work with in person. Always. I don't care if it's a realtor. I don't care if it's a seller. even if they have an attorney, CPA, I always meet them in person. In fact, I won't do business even if they want to unless I meet them in person. And the reason is I want them to see me. I'm not hiding behind anything. I want them to because you know what that does? It separates you from everybody else. And I know if I meet with that person, I always get the deal. No matter how what they'll do is they may have a bunch of offers coming in, but because I met with them, they will call me and say, "Hey, Jordan, I got all these offers coming in. I really want to work with you. You know, can you work with me?" Because they will give me a chance. And that's really all you can ask for. So I would just encourage everyone to meet everyone in person. It's much more satisfying all the way through, you know, when you're done. Like you might even get invited to Thanksgiving.
You might get to go to Thanksgiving. Now that is a solid nugget, absolutely meeting in person. So even when you're making an offer, you're like, "Hey, let me drive this to your office and hand deliver this to you."
I may make offers blind, right? I may make offers blind, but I definitely will meet the seller at some point. If I'm working direct with the seller, I will always meet them in person before I make an offer. But if it's through realtors or something else, I may make an offer. I will always meet the realtor in person first, but I may make an offer blind to a seller. But then at some point, if it gets accepted, I will always meet the seller.
You know, it's funny because we're in our business right now. We're sort of coming to the same conclusion. We're doing a lot of direct mail off market type acquisitions, mm-hmm. and we're finding that we're losing a lot of contracts where they've sort of agreed over the phone to a price. And we email them a contract, and 5 days later, we still haven't heard from them.
Right.
Where we're realizing, we're sort of right at that point, like, we have to change this. We have to drive out there and shake somebody's hand and win them over and get this contract signed. Otherwise, somebody else probably did it and got the deal instead of us.
That's right. Sorry.
That's a fantastic nugget. Always. And then, especially you being the business, you're getting referral business probably from that because people now know you. They know your face. They got a business card from you, and a year later, they might call you up for something like these people did.
Yeah, and I want them to be happy. You know, I want to make money, I feel like, the right way. So they're happy, I'm happy, I solved, you know, they were a distressed owner or just had a distressed house, something along the way, it was a win-win all the way. And so I know if I meet them in person, I'm like confident because I met them. And I often, they call me after, right, for referrals later or just to stay in touch. You'd be surprised just to stay in touch, say, "Hey, how's it going? Wow. Here's what we're doing now, I'm back on my feet," whatever else, it's just nice.
Yeah, oh, very good. Okay, so if we want to send people to your website to learn more about your fund, what website would we send them to?
Inspire My Capital, INSPIRE, like Inspire, InspireMyCapital, CAPITAL.com.
InspireMyCapital.com.
Yep, that's always a good place.
And then in terms of somebody's local to LA and they want to talk to you about the broker side or the listing side, you've got something for Good Bones Property?
Yeah, they go to goodbonesproperties.com, goodbonesproperties.com, like a house with good bones.
Perfect.
Some people laugh at that, but that realtors know what it is, and that's, I've had that forever. But yes, they can go there. They can email me, Jordan at Good Bones Properties, Jordan at Inspire My Capital, if you'd like. I always do that.
Perfect. Jordan, this is fantastic. We'll make sure we put this up in the show notes as well if you guys want to check out his websites, inspiremycapital.com and goodbonesproperties.com. Jordan, thanks so much for being on the show, man. This was great.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
All right, talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye.
Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners. This is Ken Corsini reminding you to check us out online at dealfarm.net. Feel free to download our free ebook, How to Invest in Real Estate. And do not forget, we still have our free t-shirt offer going. All you have to do to get a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt is go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Once you've done that, go to our website, email us and let us know that you've done it. Give us your address and t-shirt size, and the t-shirt will be in the mail immediately. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Take care.